Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Have you ever wondered what you could accomplish with a one-acre homestead? Well, today I talked to Michigan homesteader Jordy Buck about his journey into homesteading and all the things he's doing on a one-acre property.
Looking around, I finally see, I think I need a change. The rat race, I want to flee, my world I'll rearrange. I'm getting back to the roots of how it's meant to be. Growing gardens, picking fruit, raising livestock, living free. It's a modern homestead. Build a modern homestead.
Well, Jordy Buck, welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast.
Oh, thank you.
Well, now I invited you on because you got a lot going on up there. You're up in Michigan. What part of Michigan are you up in?
West Central Michigan. The town is Ensley Center. It's between Grand Rapids and Big Rapids.
Okay. So yeah, I mean you're definitely experiencing some cold weather already. So things are certainly changing on your homestead.
Yeah, we've had a few good frosts.
Yeah. Rachel, who I co-host with normally, she's from up there in Michigan, and yeah, she's talked about how cold it's been and stuff already. So it's just that time of the year. It's Michigan. It's what you get. So yeah, that's part of it, mm-hmm. I guess. But you got a lot going on. I mean, we're going to jump into some of the things you got going on, but why don't you just tell us about you, how you got into homesteading, a little bit about your homestead, and then we'll just kind of go from there.
Yeah, sure. I kind of got started around 2011 for the most part, which was shortly after I moved out on my own. I came up here from the Grand Rapids area because I found a cheap place to live here. I got a mobile home that was $250 a month rent. The place wasn't worth anything more than that. So, I mean, I didn't have much money to handle a whole lot, and I didn't have a whole lot of money for food either. So I ended up trying to put in a garden and get started that way to help out with some produce. Didn't work very good at first. I think my first year I got three tiny little baby carrots, like five beans, and one midget tomato was about it.
So you lost a little weight.
It was not so good. The soil up here was like a hard concrete, sandy orange color and just dead. Even the weeds weren't growing good. So I just kind of kept at it, working on it. I finally picked up some of the books that I had sitting on the bookshelf about homesteading and gardening, reading more about it, and just learning how to start actually growing a little something that didn't die. Wasn't too much longer than that. Too much after that, a friend of mine stopped by and gave me some chickens. He gave me 24 chickens.
Wow.
So I had a nice flock of free-range chickens just running wild everywhere. And I just go out and try to find their nests and gather some eggs. Eventually, my dad gave me a chicken coop, his old chicken coop that I set up for him. So between my friend giving me some chickens and my dad giving me a chicken coop, that really helped me out to kind of get my feet on the ground and get a little something going. So yeah, that was nice. I pretty much just kept up with a lot of trying to work on the garden and getting a little bit better every year. Then I started increasing the size every year, kind of doubling the size pretty much of it every year, getting a little better. And all of a sudden I realized, finally, I've got really good dirt out here and things are really starting to grow. I mean, we were bringing in some manure from the dairy farm down the road to till in the spring. I ended up getting some rabbits. Used the rabbit manure a lot in the garden, which mm-hmm. helped things out. But probably the biggest thing I ever did was the chickens. I put together a chicken tractor just run that down my garden rows, a 3-foot wide, 12-foot long chicken tractor that I just run down the garden beds in the fall, winter, and spring. And that's really what just made my dirt work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But now, so you started keeping all your chickens, or just did some chickens in chicken tractors, or are you still letting them run?
Yep. I have to have them penned up during the garden season now, because yeah. I have a lot of chickens and a giant garden, and I can lose 5 bushels of tomatoes in a day or two if the chickens get out.
Yeah.
They just tear things apart. So I have some pens out in the back with chickens during the garden season that's going down through any rows that are already harvested as I'm rotating through my garden beds. I grow in a bed system, so I do 3-foot wide beds with 2 feet in between each bed for walking space. Then I just, in my 3-foot wide beds, everything is pretty close spacing.
How many acres do you have there?
1 acre. Just one acre. And we're only growing on half of it. Almost one half an acre now is garden. I've been working for about 5 years tearing out trees and brush and pulling stumps, trying to clear the rest of my front here to have a full half acre. I think I still have about 20 big stumps I got to drag out. They're sitting pulled out, but I got to move them yet. And they're big. So that'll take a while.
You have pigs also, right?
Yeah, we have pigs. I raise potbelly pigs.
Okay.
They're pretty much my favorite of the small breed heritage pigs. I mean, I've looked into the Coonies. We used to do a little with the American Guinea hogs.
Yeah.
I went with potbellies because for the smaller size homestead pigs, they're mostly all the same. I mean, Idaho pasture pigs, the Coonies, the guinea hogs, and the potbellies, they're kind of all about the same size and temperament. And the potbellies are just the cheap ones.
Yeah.
So I can get those for $50 anywhere.
Oh yeah. Do the potbellies dig like the like any other pig? I mean, they are pretty aggressive diggers.
Some are, some aren't. Depends on their attitude. They're being smaller, they don't tend to dig real deep, but they do like to root around. As long as the soil's clean, they'll root in clean soil.
I guess I had in my mind when you're talking about getting those stumps dug out, I thought, I wonder if you just put something around the, like pinned them in around the stumps and let them just kind of root around, digging around them stumps and get them loosened up.
No,
wouldn't loosen it up much, you don't think, huh?
No, they do great in, I'm running them right now through my my corn that I've already harvested through the corn patches, and they're doing great tearing up the stubble. They like to chew on the corn stalks, and they'll gather all the corn stalks up together and make their nest, and they'll till that up pretty good. So
yeah. Well, back to your chickens. Now are you doing like meat birds, or are you doing, I mean, do you have like, you're doing a Cornish cross? You're doing just layers that you butcher occasionally. What are you doing there?
We've done the Cornish cross. I've done some turkeys too, which was fun, but I don't want to do that again. Most of our birds are egg birds right now. I had some Icelandic hens, and that's probably my favorite breed. I like that breed. It's just something about them, but they weren't quite mature yet, and I had a raccoon get in the coop and kill all 12 of my hens in 2 nights.
Yeah, that stinks.
So now I've just got an Icelandic rooster left, and he just kind of best guard rooster I've ever had to keep the critters away.
Really?
I mean, he got out of the pen, and I tried to sneak up on him in the middle of the night when he was sleeping and grab him. I can do that with all the other chickens. I can't sneak up on him. He's a good rooster.
He's paying attention. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah,
we have a lot of Isa Browns, we've got some Rhode Island Reds, Barred Rocks, egg birds. In fact, we just bought another 2 dozen. My girls bought them. They took their farmer's market money from growing cucumbers, and they bought some chickens.
Oh, wow. How old are your kids?
My oldest is 5, and then I have 4, 3, 2, and 1.
Wow, getting them started right into it, huh? That's nice. I love it. Well, you doing rabbits. What kind of rabbits are you raising?
We raise silver fox rabbits.
Oh, those are great rabbits. I love those. Yep. Yeah.
I like them a lot. They're not quite as efficient as some of the real high-end New Zealands that are coming out now. Some people have really just been aggressively working on the New Zealand breed.
Yeah.
So they're a little bit lower efficient than that. And I haven't kept up as much time as I should working with them, just selecting good genetics as I'm going. So I've gone down from around 60% weight retention after butchering to more like 50%.
Okay.
Part of that's probably our feeding too, though. We feed a lot of wild greens and a little lower protein stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they grow a little bit slower.
There's definitely some give and take there. I mean, you save a lot of money on feed costs, but they definitely do grow a little slower. So, I mean, it's some give and take for sure. But, you know, I mean, you're still getting the benefit, keeping them around a little bit longer. You're getting the benefit of that manure and whatnot. So, I mean, it's a good trade for me. But unless if you're really concentrating on the meat output of those rabbits, yeah, it's probably not the most efficient way to do it. But I think it makes up for it in the costs and things. Yeah, for sure.
I do too. I mean, I was just talking with somebody yesterday, you know, about the difference between feeding a real high-end 18% protein rabbit feed versus a cheaper 16% versus mostly wild fodder stuff. And I mean, I could probably get another 30% yield off my rabbits if I doubled their feed cost, but then I'm paying $2 to $2.50 a pound for the meat, and I'm trying to run it at about 50 cents a pound for meat right now.
I've noticed that's something just from previous dialogue we've had and stuff that it's something you're focusing a lot on, even with all your other animals too, is maybe like growing food for your animals. Like I've noticed you posted about corn for your pigs and things. So you're doing a lot of that. You're trying to really cut costs on purchasing food, trying to grow your feed for your animals.
Cost was always a big deal for me, mainly because I started with very little. I couldn't do a whole lot. So, I mean, but as far as like our rabbits, that's one of the reasons I got into rabbits, because it's easy to grow rabbit food, more or less.
Yeah,
I mean, I found one of the best feed mixes that I can come up with just for wild-grown fodder is chicory and burdock leaf with a little grass in there. They're both high protein. They're both like 18 to 22% protein leaves, the chicory and burdock. Good vitamin and nutrient profile in them, and a little bit of grass in there just to kind of even out some of the vitamins. And it comes down, it comes about 20% smaller carcasses come butcher time than if I'm feeding on a pellet.
Yeah. I've done rabbits with complete fodder and pure feed. I mean, I've done them both ways. I generally try to go about 50-50. That way I kind of keep them adaptable to either way. If I have to go one way or another, if I have to leave town for a couple of days, I don't want somebody having to pick or forage for my rabbits or something, you know? So I try to keep them on feed some, so it doesn't shock their system. But yeah, I mean, you can definitely take your rabbits either way, and they can live 100% on a good fodder and flourish and do good. One of the things I like about growing food for any of your animals, and not only just the cost, but also just the health of the food. I mean, you're going to produce something that you know what you're giving them. You're not giving them stuff that just because somebody thought it was a good idea to put in that bag, you know, of just whatever. I mean, there's a lot of medicinal, you know, additives and things they put in there to try to increase health, but you know, some homesteaders don't want that. So I like the idea of just growing your food. When you were posting about pigs, you know, talking about growing corn for your pigs, how much are you supplementing with what you're growing to your pigs versus what you're buying for pig feed?
So especially over the summer, our pigs got a lot of produce, a lot of farmer's market leftover stuff that we couldn't quite sell in time. And they ate a lot of lettuce. I found out I couldn't sell a whole lot of head lettuce. So my pigs ate a lot of really tasty fresh lettuce. But besides all that stuff, we did about 300 pounds of corn. Not bad for growing on. I had two 50 foot by 14 foot pots of corn. And so we grew about 300 pounds in there. So not too bad. That's about half of the corn that you would feed to an average meat pig in their span of from being weaned to butcher. So not a ton, but that's definitely a help. And the corn that we're growing is an heirloom corn. Specifically, most of it is Wade's Giant Indian, which is a Flint corn. And it's a variety color corn, which I like because it has such a wide variety of all the bold, bright colors, which tell me about the phytonutrients. I really like that, especially getting into a lot of the oranges for the beta carotens and a lot of the red colors and purples for the antioxidant levels.
Yeah. So yeah, well now, How much space would you have to dedicate to fully feed your pigs? Say you had, how many pigs do you have?
We have 7 potbelly piglets right now.
Okay. So you have quite a bit there. What would it take? How much food would it take to grow? How much space would it take? What would you have to grow to say feed your pigs for a whole winter with something like that?
Let's see here. Oh, I've run these numbers before. I'm pretty sure that I can, I could do it on about a quarter acre, as long as I can keep up the productivity of the corn. It can be a little finicky sometimes. I mean, you've got to keep the watering right at the right times, basically, to get the pollination to go well. And that's the biggest key. That, and then the first 2 weeks after pollination, basically, is keeping the watering right so that the ears start to develop fully. But that was a big problem we had this year. I mean, we had the first big drought and that anybody could remember up here.
Yeah, it was bad and here too.
They were saying, the local farmers were saying, if you're not irrigating, you lost 50% right off the top.
Wow. Yeah. That's a hard hit for sure.
I did see some impact, especially in my Indian corn. Well, I was trying to find another spot to plant something because once again, I'm running out of some space this year. So I've got this big gravel area that used to be my neighbor's driveway. They moved their driveway off of my lot. So now I've got this big 14, 15 foot wide gravel trough all the way down to the road. So I planted corn in it. I figured that's probably one of the hardiest plants I know that does good in tough soil. Mm. So it had some trouble. I mean, gravel and clay, water doesn't penetrate that very well.
It's probably just getting a little runoff.
Plus the drought, it had some trouble, but I still managed a respectable harvest out of it. So I'm glad for that.
Nice. Yeah, I guess I'm just fascinated by the idea of, I mean, especially when in a time when things are questionable, if you're going to be able to get what you need to feed your animals, or just the supply chain and all the problems that there have been recently, it just makes me think a lot about, okay, I have livestock. Is there a way that I can feed these livestock and have meat year round from my property? You know, is there a way to do it? How much space does it take? And what does it take to do that? And so I'm kind of fascinated by that. Rabbits, like you said, are pretty easy, but I do wonder about bigger animals like pigs. You know, what's it take to do something like that? Of course, cows take some acreage and a lot of grass, but you know, and a lot of bales you have to put up to feed them through the winter. But I was curious about pigs. That's something that a lot of homesteaders with not a real big piece of property, acre or two, and there's a lot of people out there in that situation who can raise a few pigs. Okay, what would it take to keep them fed and not have to rely on that supply chain? So I love what you're doing there and running the numbers and thinking a lot about that, because I think that's something that's important right now in these days.
Yeah, you can do a lot on 1 acre. If I had one more acre, I could do really quite a lot. I mean, you can do 100 to 200 bushels of corn, shelled corn off of an acre, and that's 54 pounds a bushel, and you only feed about 600, 650 pounds of corn in a standard hog ration per full size pig. So you can really do quite a lot if you're managing it well.
Right. Us homesteaders, we're always wanting one more acre, aren't we? Always need one
the
more
acre. The goal is 5 to 10 acres is what would work for us eventually. 20 would be like, I feel like 20, I could do just so much on it, but then it's funny. The local farmers and other farmers I talk to are always telling me how I can't do anything on just 20 acres. One of the guys told me I'd need at least 1,400 acres to be able to make a living for one guy farming.
Wow.
And I mean, he manages 1,800 acres in town here, and he told me that.
Yeah.
But I made about $7,000 off my half acre at the farmer's market this year.
Yeah, so that's great. Plus feeding your family. Yeah. And your pigs.
If there's different ways to do things, you know, but more of the intensive method versus big agriculture method. The big agriculture method just doesn't work. I mean, most of these farmers I'm talking to are making between $300 and $500 an acre profit by the end of the year.
Yeah,
that's nothing.
Yeah, yeah. You just lose. I mean, they always think about the labor. Yeah.
Property cost too. I mean, property is good. Farmland in Michigan is between $4,000 and $8,000 an acre, and at that price, it'd take 20 years to make a dime.
Yeah,
at $400 an acre.
Yeah, a lot of them big farms are passed down through the family, so they're not buying the new acres. They've had it; they inherited it. Yeah. So it's a way they can make some money with it still, you know. But it's still, it's like the equipment you got to buy and the things you have to, the resources it takes to produce crops on that dead soil. I mean, it's just amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I like organic farming, or not official organic farming, but more natural farming better, because it requires a lot of labor, but you know, it just, you don't have that overhead expense like you do with those big farms, for sure.
Yep. You know, I, even when I was younger, I mean, when I was 16, I got a job down in Door, Michigan, south of here, helping out on a dairy farm. And I really liked being on a farm. I liked the farm experience. It just made me happy there. But all the farmers were always talking about how you can't just start farming anymore. You have to have the property first, already paid for, before you can make money on a farm.
Yeah, for sure.
And that really, I mean, that just kind of broke my spirit on the whole idea at the time. And now I see a very different side of things. So I'm working on the more micro farming aspect of things and building up. And then we're saving our money and pinching pennies like crazy to be able to get that additional, that little 10 acre plot sometime.
Yeah. Well, I do find too, though, it's amazing to me, the smaller the property, I mean, you definitely have to be more aggressive on your planning and how you do things and how you grow things. Mm-hmm. But it's amazing because you're so focused on that, because you're so limited in what you have, it's amazing what you end up doing with a small property. And then a lot of times when you get that little bit bigger property, a lot of that space goes unused because, you know, you just didn't find out you didn't need quite that big, or you might just space things out a little bit more, but yet, you know, you don't grow any more sometimes if you even double your property size. So, I mean, you can for sure if you want to get intense about it, but a lot of times somebody with a small piece of property is doing so much more than somebody with a large piece of property.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There's many more things that you can, many finer things you can manage and pay attention to when you're looking on a smaller piece of dirt.
Yeah. I think the opportunities, I see a couple opportunities on a larger piece of property. One is livestock, obviously. Mm-hmm. There's just livestock you can do on a larger piece of property that you can't do on a small piece of property. Two is, like you said, growing their food. It takes a little bit of space to do that. If you're going to grow the food for your animals, that takes some space. Like even my rabbits, I can forage for them, but even if I didn't have everything here on the property, I could go other places and forage for rabbits. I mean, you could grab a bag and go out and just fill stuff up and put it up for your rabbits and do the foraging for them at a game reserve or something, or a local property somewhere else, or a park for all that matter, you know, grabbing leaves and things. I mean, you could do it. Where you get into a little bit larger livestock, that would be pretty, pretty intense. You'd have to, it'd be too much work for you to do. You'd have to be growing that on your property.
Pretty much. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons that I haven't looked into getting larger animals really. Plus where I am here, it's agricultural zoning, but unless I have at least 10 acres, I'm not allowed to get any cows, anything like that. The zoning, it's always good to read through all the specifics on zoning things, because every area is so uniquely different and weird on their wording and regulation. They specifically limited the amount of sheep that I could have per acre, cows and horses per acre, and I needed at least 10 acres. Then I could only have one of those larger animals per acre. But for chickens or rabbits, the rules say as many as required to feed your family, whatever that means.
Government, I'll tell you, they just keep their nose out of it. We could do so much more.
Yeah. And so that's why I went with pigs, because pigs were never mentioned in the township coding.
Wow.
So I got pigs.
Yeah.
Nobody can complain about that.
If they figured out those slipped through, they might go back and add them, right?
I mean, we're out in kind of a semi-middle of nowhere, just a big farm area. I have a couple neighbors close by, but then the next one's 2 miles down the road. So
yeah. Well, I like how you got into homesteading. I mean, you started very inexpensive. You got your mobile home, you got your little piece of property, you're growing your food, you're doing your thing. Would that be your advice to folks who aren't homesteading, to say, just start out cheap, get just the minimal amount you can and just start from there? Or would you do things different? What do you think about that?
You know, and I've been thinking about this a lot lately with because I'm writing my blog posts more and starting to do my YouTube videos again, I'm getting a lot more people asking me questions about things. And I have to say that in a way, I'm sad to see how homesteading has kind of become a rich man's sport. It's become a higher end, middle class, fun thing to do. You know, buy your $700 registered goats just to have frolicking around. And that's fine, you know, and most people don't have $30,000 to put up a pretty looking barn all the time. And I mean, there's no need to, I don't know what it is with everybody wanting to buy a nice compact tractor and then just park it most of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it, but you don't need to spend much money into things. I mean, I was getting with 24 chickens running wild, never buying a piece of feed at the time. I was getting probably 10, 15 eggs a day just on that, which, I mean, for me, that was more than I could handle. I mean, you could feed a small family half the day on a good flock of just wild, pure wild chickens, as long as you can keep the predators away. It doesn't take a lot of money. I mean, you don't want things to be so ugly and patched together that they're not working well. But you don't have to put a whole lot of money into things. I mean, my chicken tractor, I built it from scrap lumber. It's got some deck board and some 2x4s and a 2x6 on the side. And what I got a IBC tote that somebody was throwing away. So I cut a little bottom hole out on it and I bolted that right on top of my chicken tractor. And that's their little coop now.
Awesome.
Just stuff that didn't cost me. The only thing I paid for was, I think, $20 for some fencing to cover the wood frame.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much money. You can make things pretty, but at least before you spend money on much of anything, lay out a budget and look at the costs so you can at least understand what's needed versus what's wanted. And then just be honest about it.
Yeah. I agree. I think there's a lot of this keeping up with the Joneses in homesteading even, and everybody's wanting to have to do everything that everybody else is doing. And I've been so focused on that since the beginning that, you know, you can do this right where you're at. Take what you've got and do what you can do right now. And don't worry about what everybody else is doing. If you have to, so many public libraries now have seed libraries where you can go and get seed from the seed library for free. Yeah, we do too in our town. And it's like, you could literally get seeds for free even if you have to. And so it just doesn't take that much to get started. Now there's, of course, you can spend tons of money in homesteading. You can build the most elaborate raised beds. And you know, some of that stuff is beautiful. It looks nice. It's great, but it ain't going to feed you any better.
It's really good to have things that are pleasing to you. You know, I mean, as much as you can, make it pleasant to you, because then you're going to enjoy your time. And if you get to the point where you're not enjoying your time so much, it's probably time to sit back and rethink what's going on, because something's off.
Yeah, I agree. And I just think there's so much that I hear so often these folks saying, well, I wish I had a few acres so I could start homesteading. And I'm like, they're just, it's always going to be out of reach, because they always keep it to this ideal that, you know, it has to be this, 10 acres, like you were mentioning, that'd be great. Yeah. But they think they have to start there. And the fact is, it's just, you can do something where you're at right now. And it just doesn't take a lot, and it doesn't have to, you know, they make those jokes about, you know, you got your $10 tomato because you spent so much money trying to garden, you know, grow a garden and stuff, but it doesn't have to be that way. It just doesn't have to be that way. Food can be grown extremely cheap. Like you said, in the beginning, you were doing it because you didn't want to, you couldn't really afford to spend the money on food. So you threw some seeds out there and tried to grow some food, and it can be that simple. You can literally grow some food real cheap. You know, now, weather, you know, there's, you could get hit with a bug infestation or some bad weather, you know, a big drought or something right off the bat, and it could hurt you and it can make it real hard. But on a normal year, depending on where you're at, you can probably grow it really easy. You know, in most places, there's a season, there's a time, and if things go just right, you can end up with a lot of food really cheap. And it was kind of the thing I was looking at that when I first got started too. I wanted healthy food cheap. Well, you know, anything they call, you know, like healthy, you know, organic produce in the grocery store is, you know, triple the price. So I didn't want to spend that kind of money on that. So it was like, you know, let's grow some healthy food cheap. And I love how you're doing it. And it sounds like you haven't really veered very far away from that. You've tried to keep the expenses low. You're trying to grow your food, your meat, your vegetables, everything there on a budget that, you know, that fits your family's needs. And like you said, you're even growing enough to take to the farmer's market and make some cash with.
Oh yeah. I grew more than we could sell at the market. It wasn't the biggest farmer's market. Mm-hmm. So, I really want to try and we're figuring out how to do better with that this year. I was actually the market manager too. So working on trying to put some better ideas together to promote the market and see what we can do, see if we can make the smaller town market work or not. But oh shucks. I mean, it was kind of funny. I was heading to market in my Toyota Corolla. I've got 8 produce crates in the back seat stacked up. I have 2 coolers and a crate in the passenger front seat. The trunk is all completely full of stuff. I've got 3 coolers strapped on the back of the trunk, 1 on the top and all my signage and my tent on the top. And I got to go 25 miles an hour down the back road so I don't lose anything. Kind of like the Clampets in their old truck.
You mean having a big old dually pickup truck with a big old long livestock trailer isn't part of the necessities of homesteading? I don't understand. I see so many that have to have that.
It's impressive what you can do with what you have. I mean, even just a minivan. I used to use an old, I had a 97 Dodge Caravan with a trailer hitch on the back of it. And the thing was just, it was an older one. I mean, it was just real sturdy and heavy. I use that for everything from skidding logs across the property, my boat trailer, hauling trailers of manure back and forth across the place. I mean, take the seats out and you can load the thing full of stuff. It's not designed for regular hauling, but if you're just talking occasional use, you can do that kind of thing with a smaller vehicle, load them up and haul things.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you are definitely doing a great job at growing your own food, raising your own food, and all that kind of stuff. Do you do a lot of preserving of your food? I mean, are you putting up a lot of food? I mean, are you just doing canning? Or are you just freezing things? How what's that look like on your homestead?
I don't do a ton myself. My wife manages most of that. We do a lot of canning. It's the simplest method. And once again, somebody helped us out with that. I had been asking around some people in town if anybody might have a old pressure canner that they might want to sell. Because, I mean, we're looking at some of these big ones and they're $300 or $400 plus. And there was a nice old woman across town who said she had one in the pantry somewhere and she'd sell it for $75. I went over there and we dug it out and she just gave it to us. So we've been using the tar out of that thing. It just had to get a new seal on it. Still had all the spare parts from 1978 packed away.
I love that. I just love how you just networked your community for that. That's great.
I do what I can that way. Just to be part of the community. I mean, it's important to me, even though I'm not naturally good at being neighborly and being part of the community. So I'm trying to work on it. But yeah, I mean,
same boat.
We've got 3 big shelves, bookshelves full of jars and canned vegetables and meats and pickles right now. The top of the cupboards all the way across are full of jars. And I might have to build a new shelf soon because we're kind of out of space again.
Good problem.
I'll see if I can manage that.
Yeah.
We do a lot of canning of the produce, a lot of the greens and things that are more nutritious that we're trying to save for winter. So a lot of the spinach, kale, chard. We've got a lot of pickles. We save some grains that are put up in jars, but that's a lot of the times that's more for seed. I'll save a lot of the corn seed, just kind of pack it up in jars and put it in a shady corner.
Yeah. So you're putting up a lot of meat, just freezing your meats and things. You can a lot of that too? Or
for the most part, the meat is frozen. Mm-hmm. Some of it gets canned, but we start by filling the freezer first and then canning what's left.
Great. Yeah. You're pretty big into hunting too. I mean, I've heard you talk about it before. I mean, you do some hunting, right?
Not so much after I got married. I mean, I was like 30 days at least during hunting season. I was hunting. Yeah. Now it's more like occasional fishing with the girls. But
yeah,
boy, that's hard to be productive with everybody gets their cane poles because they're easier for them to manage than fishing reels. But boy, It's hard to be very productive. I want to start doing that more. I need to find some new hunting property for deer hunting before I can do much of that, though.
Yeah. I mean, some people, it's a huge part of the supplying the meat for their homestead, you know, getting out there hunting. But, you know, it's like if you do what you can and life is busy and, you know, you got a homestead to tend with and you got a family and things, and it's hard to get out of the woods.
Around here, it's such a competitive thing. Oh, my word. I mean,
yeah.
Some of the smaller schools close down the first few days of hunting season when firearm season for deer opens up. And it's such a competitive thing. You really got to work to get your animals around here. So especially if you want some of the bigger ones, it takes a lot of time before the season and during the season to get good animals. So that's another reason it's harder to make it worth it for me right now, just being as busy as I am with the family. And I'm trying to spend as much of my spare time. I don't have much of that, but I'm trying to spend my spare time at home as much as I can here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, your family's, you got young kids, and this is the time to really spend bringing them up and teaching them things and showing them things. And it sounds like you're doing a great job too. They're out there selling cucumbers to buy chickens. I mean, it sounds like
selling you're doing cucumbers. Great. They were supposed to be selling flowers, but the flower garden didn't do so well in the weeds. Mm-hmm. They planted their flowers and they were watering them good, but them weeds, the cucumbers were trellised up, so they got to grow above most of the weeds.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, flowers can be tough. I mean, there's some that do great and some that are definitely more challenging. But it's a whole nother income situation if you can get something going there too, for sure. Yeah.
You know, one of the things we do with flowers is sunflowers for animal feed. I grow, I forget which variety, some variety of giant sunflower that I got from Baker Creek years ago. And I always keep saving and planting seeds. So, I mean, we'll get 8 to 12 foot tall, big old stalks with 2 foot wide heads on them. And I save those for livestock feed. I mean, people don't really often realize a sunflower seed is about equal to soybean in protein levels.
Yeah.
And often they're a little higher in the sunflower oil. They're higher calorie. So they're a really great way to supplement the animal feed. We fed those after I harvested them all. We fed those not entirely, but we added them into their feed for about 2 months.
Yeah. Those big mammoth sunflowers. That's the ones I grow too. Those things get huge. Yeah. They're
tall enough that I can grow stuff underneath them too.
Yeah.
So that's why I like them versus black oil sunflower seed, about 2.5-3 feet tall, and just a field of that. I like growing the big tall ones, and then I'll do like a cucumber trellising up them or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yep, use them for a trellis. Peas, I've grown a few things up sunflower stalks too, and you're right, they're tall enough actually. They don't really shade things out as long as you keep it on the behind it, because the leaves are higher up and stuff. So yeah, they still get plenty of sunlight at the base.
Only issue with those is when you plant them in good, nice, rich, soft soil, right about when they get ready to harvest, they always fall over.
Yeah, they're leaning. Mine don't fall completely over, but they're sure drooping pretty good.
They droop real heavy, and maybe 1 out of 5 just uproots all the way in the soft dirt. Right when the seed heads get real full and heavy, and you get a little bit of rain or wind, and they just some of them just go. I had my Jerusalem artichokes do that too a lot this year in the windstorm we had a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
I couldn't believe how tall they got. 10, 12, 13 feet tall. And boy, those things have been productive this year. Yeah. First year I ever grown them, I planted them early this spring. I bought some locally from a few different people who had some tubers. And that's going to be a big part of our winter pig feed, the Jerusalem artichoke. I've harvested so far about 10.5 pounds average per plant.
Yeah, they're real productive, super productive plant.
That's over twice the calories per square foot that I could grow from the best corn I've ever done so far. They're harder to store because they're full of water, so it takes a ton of space to store them.
Yeah.
Than it does shelled corn. So that's kind of the downside. But, I mean, we had a drought year, and they did better than any other crop. The sunflowers in general did better than any of the other crops with less irrigation.
Yeah, yeah, they're solid crop for sure. So they consider them kind of like one of them preparedness foods. It's a good thing to have out there, just because it's kind of bulletproof.
I like them. I mean, even the mammoth sunflowers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they'll spread too. You got to be. That's the one maybe thing you got to be careful of in certain situations. Them sunchokes will spread on you. They definitely will.
Oh, yeah, you get good dirt. The way to help that from happening too much. When the stalks are still green, before the seed heads are fully matured and dropping their seeds, just right before then, the first seed heads, the first flowers are starting to wither a little bit. Just go and chop all the stalks off and just pull the seed heads off. And then that's the bigger problem usually, is the seeds dropping everywhere. You can't see the seeds. You're not going to pick them up. They're tiny little things. It's fairly easy to get most of the tubers, but if you're dropping thousands of seeds everywhere, that's when they really start to go crazy.
They definitely spread with the rhizomes too, from the tubers. I've seen I don't really hardly ever regard that as a big problem. When my food wants to spread out and give me more food, I usually it's not really a problem for me most of the time. But if you're real close to
food, plant grows like weeds.
Yeah, but if it, if it's starting to encroach on property lines and things like that, it can it can be a problem. But yeah, all in all,
I got to work with my mints every year because of that. That my mint will spread 2 feet on each side all the time. Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
One of the few things I use the rototiller for, I rototill down the sides of the mint to keep it back in place.
Mint is crazy. I made a mistake of putting it in one raised bed one time, and it's still in that raised bed several years later. And I yank it as soon as I see it every time, and it still pops up constantly. I mean, I just can't get rid of it in there, which is not that big of a deal, but it's just, you got to be careful where you plant mint for sure.
I have a lot of it. I have an apple mint, a chocolate mint, and a peppermint, 3 50-foot rows, 3 feet wide.
Yeah.
So, and I started with just one little pot of each.
That's all it takes.
I just split them up over the years. If you really want to get technical with it, every single stalk can be planted in its own little spot and usually split up into two or three pieces and planted. And you do it well, they tend to take root. So that's what I did. I just split all one pot up and it worked.
It's a useful crop. Plus, it's a good cash crop. People will buy mint and things. I mean, people want that kind of stuff. It's a good little herb to sell or have on hand. I mean, I throw it in tea or whatnot.
You have to be in the right market, I found. A lot of the more rural type farmers markets, nobody wants that. They want cucumbers, big hot seller. We're doing a lot more cucumbers. They want potatoes, and they like the big ones better. And then big red tomatoes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just the general stuff.
As much as I like all my unique looking tomatoes, I mean, my Cherokee purples, all the little stripy and multicolored little salad tomatoes, I couldn't sell hardly any of those at all. So it was just such a waste. Even cherry tomatoes, I couldn't sell them at the market this year.
Yeah, there's just some markets that are better on certain things. I find like tea mixes, like with mint and things like that, at certain markets, it only works in. Microgreens only work in some markets too. I've seen some that just aren't interested in microgreens at all, and some that they can't keep them. I mean, they sell so fast. So it's like, it just depends on where you're.
I don't think they would work in this area. Yeah. But I know when we went up to Gaylord, my wife and I will take a trip there once or twice a year. We like the area there up north. Right up almost before the Mackinac Bridge, so pretty far north up in Michigan.
Yeah.
Microgreens are real common at the farmer's market there, but it's a tourist farmer's market, more of a tourist area.
Yeah. And it's a shame they don't work everywhere, because it's a high profit product that a person could grow year round, really. So it's a shame they don't work everywhere. But yeah, if you're in the right market, you can make a lot of money with them.
We're definitely doing more cucumbers, big red tomatoes, potatoes, and yellow onions. Another thing that worked great at the market, and some of the other market growers thought I was crazy for coming up with the idea, but the Egyptian walking onions, if you grow them nice and healthy and keep them spaced out so they get a little bit larger, they make a really amazing spring scallion. So, I mean, like inch to inch and a half bulbs on them in the springtime, kind of in June, I guess, early summer. And I sold a lot of those in 2 pound bundles as spring scallions. And nice. They are so flavorful.
Yeah. Yeah. Rachel and I were talking about that a couple episodes ago, and she's growing those, and I've actually never grown them, but yeah, I think they're a great crop. I mean, I watch how they work and everything. I'm thinking, boy, that's just a productive crop that you don't have to put any work into. It's just going to keep on producing for you, which I think is always a great idea. So I definitely need to get some of those on my homestead.
I've got a lot of them. I have two 50-foot by 3-foot beds, and then just kind of, I got a 5-gallon bucket in the shed full of the top set bulbs right now that I've probably just going to toss. I don't know. I've got a lot of them right now.
Pigs eat those?
Not really. I haven't found any animal that wants to eat an onion.
Yeah. I didn't know about those pigs or not. I didn't know if they'd eat them. I'm pretty sure chickens don't really care too much for them, but
luckily almost no bugs eat onions either though. So,
right. That's why it's good to interplant them when your crops. That's what I do. I put onions around my beds and things.
Yeah. I've seen anywhere from like an 80% to a 20% reduction in pests by interplanting with onions. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always work well, but sometimes it works very well. So I tend to do that as much as I can.
Yeah. I do that same thing. Well, you got the blog. What inspired you to start a blog and start telling other people about this? You just wanted to share the homesteading bug?
Well, part of it was I've always had a bit of a knack for writing, and I've always enjoyed writing. In high school, I considered, I was taking some specialty writing courses, and I had considered going to college to be a writer or a journalist because I like that side of things. I ended up not, because once I got a better look at kind of the industry side, the standard industry of like writing and journalism and all that, I didn't like where it tended to go politically all the time. And just, I didn't like the culture there. But eventually I found some guys on YouTube talking about blogging. Yeah. Income School.
Yeah.
And they kind of convinced me to start giving it a try. It's something I'd always kind of wanted to do, but I've always been so busy. I mean, I've been working in carpet installation since I was 14, pretty much full time. When I was single, I was doing like 60, 70, 80 hours a week to make ends meet. I've just always been so busy, it wasn't even a thought. Finally, I decided, you know, I'm going to start doing this. I like writing. I like sharing, you know, helpful information. I like being able to help people. And if I'm good at writing, I should be able to help people through writing. So I started my website, my blog online.
Yeah, northernhomesteading.com is your blog, and you got some great information in there. I mean, I just love how you get right down to the actual questions people are wondering about, you know, about a rabbit or about a chicken or whatever. You get right into that question, you answer that question straight to the point, get it out there, move on to the next question. And I love that. I mean, it's a good way to blog. It's a good way when people are looking for answers. Yeah. So that's how they find them.
That's kind of how my brain works. So that's nice. I don't tend to get too caught up in the storytelling side of things. I did at first. I had to learn not to, because all of the writing training that I had before said was about, you know, focusing on the creative writing side. Unfortunately, I found out, so I mean, that's what almost all writing classes will teach you. It's that side, but that's not usually the side that matters. I mean, unless you're writing a book. And even then, most books, a lot of times, people are looking for information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I love a good story, though.
Yeah. A good story is good. But there's definitely a difference. And I wish that would have been like touched upon more in a lot of my writing training before. Yeah. That there's a difference between like writing a novel, which is your creative writing, and then just writing clear, useful information that doesn't trail off onto other things.
Yeah, yeah. I find YouTube and podcasts are the better places for stories, right?
they tend to be. Well, YouTube, you get to watch what's going on, and it's more like watching a TV show.
Yeah.
Podcasts, well, I mean, it's basically like the radio. So it's more, it's less of a dedication to sit and listen to a podcast than it is to read through a big blog post.
You've done some YouTube videos as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I keep changing the name on my YouTube channel. I'm going to quit that finally. I'm not good at the whole branding side of things.
Well, give me the latest. Give me the latest title, and I'll put that in the show notes.
Well, it was Northern Homesteading, and then it was Karen Stone Farm, which is the little business name we came up with for our farm because of the giant boulders and rocks that we pulled out of the ground, and now I have these stone cairns piled up everywhere. But then it went to Northern Homesteading. Now I just changed the name a few months back to Homestead Know-How.
Okay.
I thought that just kind of described what I'm trying to do. Just show some know-how.
Yeah, good.
So Homestead Know-How.
I'll definitely get that in the show notes along with your website. You got a lot going on there, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about what you're going to be doing and reading about it. And sounds like you got big plans as far as expansions in the future. And
so this year I added about a 20 by 120 to the garden area. I ran the chickens through that three times. My pigs are just starting to work through it now where we planted the corn, kind of building up the soil. Part of that's going to end up being my office shed when I get that put up this winter. So I'm going to have a separate from the house little office that I build out there so I can do my work out there. It's hard to work in the house when kids are up. Got the other side of the property where we've got about another 40 by 120 on the other far end that I've been clearing out. We cut down probably 40 or 50 trees there the past few years, and I still got some stumps to finish moving. They're pulled out and in a pile. I just got to drag them out later and grade that down, smooth it. I'm going to put all the animals over there over the winter. That's good dirt over there, though. Nice, deep, loose soil. So that's going to be where I want my corn next year, corn and potatoes. And then all the gravel area, I'm probably just going to do more of like a grassy pasture kind of thing. Chicory, too, the super hardy, deep-rooted plants for the rabbits.
Yeah. Well, you're doing a lot with 1 acre. I know that. It sounds like you got a ton going on and a lot of plans to expand.
Not much more I can do.
Yeah, yeah.
And most of everything is on a half acre because the other half is wooded still, and I'm not cutting down all those trees right now.
Yeah, yeah. Do you utilize the wood? I mean, do you burn wood or anything like that? Or
somewhat. I burn a lot of wood in the greenhouse. I didn't even mention that. I put up a greenhouse this past early spring, February. I put up a little greenhouse. Heck of a lot of work to keep that warm because it's not an insulated greenhouse, one layer of plastic.
Yeah.
So I burned a lot of wood in there. I have a wood stove in my shed that I'll burn when I'm out there working for a lot in the winter. And we sell a bit of firewood too over the winter. All my neighbors around here, they're all burning wood for the winter. So somebody always runs out of wood in February and needs a week's worth before they get a big delivery. So I sell a little firewood.
That's awesome. Yeah. You are definitely doing a lot with that 1 acre for sure. About as much as I've heard anybody doing. So yeah, you're doing some good stuff there. Yeah. I'll keep you hopping though, for sure. Well, I'll definitely get people, or let people know about your website and your YouTube channel in the show notes and send people over there. Like I said, I think what you're doing is great. I think you're giving them some good information. They need to check it out. And man, I find you're just an inspiration, man. I love what you're doing. And it kind of gets me excited about thinking about, you know, growing food for my animals a little bit more and, you know, continue to expand. So I think you're doing some good stuff there. And I just love how you're getting your kids involved in it and raising up a whole new generation of homesteaders. I love it.
Oh yeah. They're taking a lot of ownership in their small little areas. Two of my girls have their chickens. One of the girls, she's got her own rabbit right now.
That's great.
She can't manage chickens, but she can go and feed a rabbit some grass. So that's her thing. She loves the rabbits, goes and checks it every day. It's her favorite thing in the world.
Yeah.
And then they've got their little garden patch that they can plant whatever they want in it.
That's great. That's the way to do it, man. You're doing a good job there. I wish I had got my kids into it when they were younger. I didn't really get started until they were older, moving out of the house. Even they were all growing up, and I was just getting really started into it then. But now I got grandkids now, so I try to get them doing things as much as I can. So,
it'll be a while before I get that point.
It'll be a while. You got a few years, but good stuff, man. Great.
We figure that a lot of the stuff that I'm doing with the girls is part of their homeschooling. We homeschool our kids. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I were both homeschooled too. So it's very natural for us.
Yeah,
not at all foreign. Doesn't sound that hard. This is what we know. But a lot of that works into what I call their life skills and science classes. So we talk about a lot of that. We've been learning a lot about the functions of worms in the soil this year, digging down holes and kind of dissecting the dirt to look at the little worm tunnels going through the ground. And I tell you what, we have a lot of potholes across the whole yard because they're digging for worms now.
Well, Dad can teach him a lot about soil since he turned that soil there on the property into something usable after it wasn't. So yeah, that's good stuff, man. That's great. Yeah, you're doing good things there, man. I appreciate you coming on and talking to us about it. And like I said, I really encourage folks to go check out everything you're doing.
Cool. Yeah, it's always good to talk with someone else about this kind of stuff. You know, it just kind of gets you re-energized again.
Yeah, that's why I love doing the podcast. I love talking to folks who are doing things. It keeps me going. You know, I hear what they're doing and it just gives me energy to get out there and try some things and stay at it. And we all need that from time to time for sure. So I appreciate you coming on though. This is good talk and I think people are going to really enjoy it. Thanks.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. I'll catch you later.
Well, I don't know about you, but I found that really inspiring hearing about all the things that Jordy's doing up there in Michigan on his little 1 acre piece of land, just not only growing food for his family, but feeding the livestock, making a little money with it, raising a family to learn about the homesteading skills and principles. I just really enjoyed that episode, and I know you did too. Go check out his website, northernhomesteading.com. Check out his YouTube channel, Homestead Know-How. I'll have the links in the show notes so you can check those out. And until next week, happy homesteading and God bless.
Looking around, I find the sea. I think I need a change. The rat race, I want to flee. My world, I'll rearrange. I'm getting back to the roots of how it's meant to be. Growing gardens, picking fruit, raising livestock, living free. It's a modern homestead. Build a modern homestead. A lot of folks don't understand why I wanna live this way. They never eat them from their land like we do here every day. Snapping beans like grandma did, sitting on her front porch. Hunting and fishing like a kid, once you've done all of your chores.